Hanford comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. 203-333-9422 is our number. It's Friday. In other stories you may have missed, we never got a chance to really chat about Julie Balaga. Beautiful article in the editorial pieces written by Emil Frankel, who was also very active in Connecticut state government for a long time. But Julie Balaga passed away a couple of weeks ago at the age of 91. She was a Westport resident for most, if not all, of her life, but I think most of her life. But she was spoke of in such glowing terms for being a pioneer. She was the first woman Republican to throw her hat in for governor in a very meaningful way. She ultimately lost the three-way primary and didn't run. But she was known and revered and respected as somebody that kept crossing the aisle to get what was done for the betterment of the people of Connecticut. According to Mr. Frankel, she was a, quote, model of what public service should be, a source of advice and political collaboration. He said his relationship with her dated back to the 1970s. And he was from Weston, she was from Westport, and they worked together. And he said that when he was asked to become Commissioner of Transportation by then-Governor-elect Lowell Weicker, Julie was the first person whose advice I sought. She had been the Boston Regional Director for the federal EPA under President George H.W. Bush, then went on to serve as a member of the board of the U.S. Export-Import Bank. But she practiced a pragmatic style of politics and public service that prized negotiation and compromise and tempered strong principles with realism. So many people in the opposite party have extolled her virtues and have talked about Julie Balaga in a way that we would like to be able to talk about our politicians of today. Joining us right now, Congressman Jim Himes. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show. Jim, did you happen to know Julie Balaga? Was she an acquaintance of yours at all?
I don't think so. I caught the tail end of your presentation there. And no, I don't think I knew her.
Yeah, well, she was she passed away at 91, but she was a very fierce lover of the environment. And she was just extolled by everybody as somebody who just kept walking across the aisle. She was a Republican, a pragmatic Republican, but, you know, she was a friend to Democrats alike. And I think that she was from an age in Connecticut politics where people routinely, you know, walked across the aisle to get stuff done. And that's a great thing to be remembered for as a public servant, don't you think?
Sure is. And gives us all a goal to, you know, to try to migrate our political system away from the insane polarization that we have today, you know, the just vicious personal attacks and the polarization that we have today to a, you know, to an era where we understood that we had, you put it exactly right. We all have different, different policy ideas. We have different ways of looking at the world, but start with an acknowledgement that we, our similarities as Americans outweigh our differences.
We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes, 203-333-9422. So, Congressman, I am a bit obsessed with trying to save Remington Woods as an intact forest for the people of Bridgeport and surrounding communities, because it's just an unusual opportunity to save contiguous forest land that was already polluted and is now apparently, although I'm not sure it's been proven to be, but apparently restored to a cleaner place. And there's a lot of conversations. The P&Z in Bridgeport, among themselves, apparently did not hear everybody who wanted to speak. That's just true. But they made a decision that some would be better than all. They were afraid of lawsuits, constitutional takings. You know, we're a very rich state. We care a lot about open space. I'm not suggesting that there should be a taking without compensation. But why can't we designate this urban oasis as something that the people of Bridgeport should have in perpetuity and the animals should have? Why can't we pay them a reasonable something to keep this space intact for conservation?
Yeah, well, I think we could, Lisa, and I want to be careful about this. I mean, you know, look, at the end of the day, what happens to that property, which is really remarkable. I've been through it a couple of times. It's remarkable for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, the DuPont subsidiary, remember, this was Remington Arms that got bought by DuPont. So DuPont has kind of the obligation to clean it up. Now, it's one of their subsidiaries. It's all very confusing. But the point is, it's an amazing, amazing space, right? You have these ponds where there's still some munitions at the bottom of those ponds, obviously a very dangerous situation. But because people haven't been there, it's amazing when you go through there. You know, the wildlife is like you're in northern Maine or something, not in the middle of Bridgeport. But to get to your question, Lisa, I do try it's up to, ultimately up to the people of Bridgeport to decide how they want to use their territory. So I try not to, you know, weigh in on these things. But you probably could. The question is, on the flip side of those who are saying preserve the whole thing, and it would be remarkable. I mean, it could be truly, truly amazing, is the fact that Bridgeport is a pretty poor city, right? And my understanding is that the zoning board zoned it as, you know, the opportunity that would give somebody the opportunity to do some residences and offices. That would become taxable property, right? Meaning that, open space, a park for 100% of the land, there would be no tax revenue from it. If you had, you know, some offices and some residences, there would be. So I'm not saying that's the right answer. I'm just saying that you probably could turn it into a park. It would involve a whole bunch of money paid to this DuPont subsidiary, and that would be money that wouldn't get used for something else. That's just the nature of this stuff. But the trade-off, of course, would be that you'd end up with a really beautiful, beautiful spot, but you wouldn't end up with any tax revenue for the city of Bridgeport. So that's what I think the city leaders of Bridgeport.
I don't buy it. With all due respect, Congressman Himes, I don't buy it. We've had so many people talk to us about the underdeveloped, already concrete, impervious spaces within the city of Bridgeport that can be and should be converted to much better taxable uses. I'm sorry. I don't think everything is a question of benefit versus not just risk, but, you know, the downside when you weigh it all. And there are certain parts of land unique.
But it is a real argument. I mean, and by the way, I started my answer by saying, as a federal official, I don't weigh in on decisions that should be appropriately made by the people of Bridgeport. I'm just telling you that, there's lots of other undeveloped land in Bridgeport. I spent a lot of my life trying to figure out ways to remediate it. You'd like to remediate it. That, too, is expensive. But my point is that it's not, it's a fair debate. You know, should something be 1% wild in perpetuity, that would be magnificent. But the trade-off, of course, as you point out, there's always trade-offs, is that you wouldn't get any tax revenue, and that's revenue that would go to police, fire, schools, et cetera. That's the issue.
Yeah. Well, I'm advocating for open space. I mean, you can always argue that about any open space. We would have no parks. We're chatting with Congressman Himes. So, Congressman, let's talk about what you are in charge of, which is representing us in the fair city of Washington, D.C. Let me ask you something. I want to ask you about January 6th. You know, there's a lot of background noise that goes on every single day in the news between various people that are getting prosecuted, little details of their individual cases. From where you are in Washington, D.C., how much conversation is there still about January 6th, and what's the position of the House of Representatives with respect to that?
Well, as you know, Lisa, I mean, the official position, and then I'll give you kind of what's happening behind closed doors and over dinners and that sort of thing. You know, the official position, obviously, is that we've got a select committee that is investigating the events of January 6th. And it's, you know, sadly, the Republicans prevented the formation of a non-congressional, non-political commission to investigate this, which was a huge mistake. You know, whatever you think, whatever side you're on, you know, January 6th, the attack on the Congress that day was the most serious attack on our democratically elected government and the most seriously attacked on the peaceful transfer of power since the Civil War. And that bears some scrutiny, right? So we do have the select committee underway, which is uncovering information. Kind of every week we learn something more about what exactly led up to January 6th. So that committee is doing its work. I'll tell you, behind closed doors, it was a really, really tough day. I've spent every year I've been in Washington, I disagree. I'm a Democrat. I disagree with the Republicans on a lot of stuff, but I've really worked hard to build personal relationships across the aisle. At the end of the day, we're all people, and I think it's important to have those relationships. January 6th made that harder because What a lot of us saw was, you know, a violent attack on the Capitol in which there were fatalities. First time ever the peaceful transfer of power has been called into question, continues to be called into question by Donald Trump based on zero evidence.
I know.
And when you have Republican colleagues who you thought were your friends basically being cowards and saying, I'm going to not risk Donald Trump's wrath to try to cover up or to deny or to underplay what happened, it's pretty hard to stay friends with that person because it's our democracy that's at stake here, right? So, you know, the short way of saying what I just said is that a lot of personal relationships got very badly strained by what happened in the Congress on January 6th.
Yeah, yeah. Where are you now, by the way, Congressman Jim Himes? Where are you?
I'm on my way north from that fair city of Washington on the train. So that's the background noise you hear. I'm sorry about that.
Are you taking the train versus a plane? What do you do?
I'm almost always a train guy. You know, the plane can be a tiny bit faster, but it gets delayed. You know, it's a big hassle, security. I get on the train. I can open up the laptop, do work, get a cup of tea, and that's a very pleasant couple of hours.
Yeah, it is. And do you come right into Stanford?
Come right into Stanford. Couldn't be easier.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes, 203-333-9422. Congressman, I know you're, I know that you're rooting for Joe Biden's success. Frankly, so am I. I'm always rooting for the president's success, but I have a soft spot for Joe Biden as a human being. I think he's just a wonderful man. And I'm disheartened to see that the poll ratings are really losing a lot of confidence in his administration. People on the streets are very upset about rising gas prices. That always hits us deeply in the pocketbook immediately. And they think that he just does not have a good grip right now on decisions that are going to have a good impact on our economy. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah. Look, there's no arguing with the fact that his numbers are not what we would like them to be. And that started with, you know, something that, you know, will be part of his legacy. And I'm not happy to say it because I, too, am a Joe Biden supporter. But, you know, the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan in August, you know, that really started a slide in his numbers. And we can talk about why that is. But the point I'd rather make, Lisa, is, you know, there's something more important than the president's poll numbers, which is how we're doing in our district around things like infrastructure. And, of course, mm-hmm. we did pass an infrastructure bill, a bipartisan infrastructure bill that's going to deliver $5 billion to the state of Connecticut to solve this problem that you and I have been pulling our hair out over for years, the traffic, the bad trains, et cetera. So does that translate into a political win for Biden? I don't know. It takes a long time for these projects to get built and that sort of thing. In the meantime, of course, it's disruptive. But I just could not be happier that for the first time since I've been in politics, this country finally said, we can't live in the 19th century anymore. You know, we need to be competitive on our infrastructure, and we did something about it. So my hope is that translates into, you know, positive numbers for the president. But, you know, I could not be happier that after talking about it for years, we finally got that, you know, roads,
so,
bridges.
And what is that going to mean? What's that going to mean in Fairfield County specifically? Literally, what is it going to mean? Because I spoke to Chris Murphy about it, Senator Murphy, and I said to him, look, you know, I've looked at some plans for high-speed rail, and they're not very pretty for areas of Fairfield County because they require moving through a lot of sensitive coastal neighborhoods and a lot of, frankly, very wealthy ones. And he seemed to not care. He's like, look, I'm not going to kid you. I'm an advocate of high-speed rail. I don't care who we have to plow through. But you represent Fairfield County, and you are going to care. So the devil's in the details with this money. What's it going to mean for Fairfield County?
Yeah. Look, set aside high-speed rail, right? You know, first of all, okay. No, we're not cutting through Old Greenwich and through all those neighborhoods. Not going to happen. Secondly, Chris Murphy represents those areas as a senator, too. But here's my point. I don't want to talk about high-speed rail. I'll tell you what I told the president on high-speed rail. Hey, you know, someday if you can get me from, you know, Stanford to Washington in 2 hours, I'll be very grateful. But you know what I need right now? I need people in Wilton and Weston and Ridgefield and Trumbull to be able to use the train to get to Stanford. Forget high-speed rail. You know, we've got people who, you know, they've got 9 miles to go. You know, they need to go from, let's just say, Weston to Stanford, which is growing mm-hmm. like a weed, and it yep. takes him 45 minutes to do. That's what I'm interested in. What's the fix? We're going to improve the Danbury line. We're going to build out parking and stations. We're going to actually make some trains that you could use to get to your job. You know, Stanford, you and I do this every single week. You know, any time of day, there's congestion on 95 right there between kind of exit
That's
7
right.
and 8, right? There's little things you can do, and I don't want to get into sort of widening or extra lanes, but there's little things that you can do to actually alleviate that. And that turns into 15 minutes of saved time for
Huge.
Hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of people. So that's what
Huge.
I get excited about.
Me too, actually. And, you know, when you make a trip faster and you're not idling in traffic, you also increase the air quality. You improve the air quality. So it's all
good. Exactly. Hey, something else I'm excited about, Lisa, you know, I get around D.C. on a bicycle. That's how I travel D.C. because there's traffic down there, too.
Really?
There's a lot of yeah. You know, right now in all of Fairfield County, biking is a dangerous, dangerous thing. We don't
Very.
Have bike lanes.
Very.
You know, we don't have the kind of the bike share programs that New York and Washington have. There's significant money in the infrastructure law, bipartisan infrastructure law, that is going to make our streets safer for pedestrians, for running, and for bicycling. Now, I'm not saying people need to bicycle from Weston to Stanford, but, you know, if you live a mile outside of Stanford or a mile outside of Greenwich, we're going to build you some lanes and some infrastructure that will allow you, if you want to, you know, to do something that's a real win-win and either walk or bike to the office.
Well, I have an idea. You want to hear my idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
My idea. Okay. All right. So I'm a very big proponent of the Norwalk River Valley Trail. Huge
yes.
proponent. I walk it almost every day with my dogs. And I walk different parts of it. And I know that the ambitious plan, which I adore, is to get from Calf Pasture Beach all the way to Danbury. And I believe it will happen. But as long as we're thinking about it and we want it to be rustic and beautiful, there's no reason why a part of it can't be a gravelly, I'm not saying impervious surface, but the kind of a thing that a mountain bike or an electric bike can easily ride with, like, you know, 12 to 18 inches on the left-hand side. As long as we're doing it, we can make it friendly for bicyclists and walkers, is my point.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. You know, the Norwalk Trail is an amazing, you know, when it gets built out, that's going to be an amazing amenity. And yes,
fantastic. It's going to be,
you know, right now, right, you know what's happening right next to the Norwalk Trail? We're building out the Merritt 7 train station, right? Merritt 7, all those buildings along there are full of employers, lots and lots of jobs. You can't really take a train there now. There's going to be a train station
no.
right there so that if you live in
right.
Ridgefield or if you live down in Stanford, you can take the train. You know, the other thing I get excited about is the Pequannock River in Bridgeport, right? Bridgeport, obviously, challenge city, but just north, you've got Trumbull, you've got Monroe. I won't tell you it's 21st century, you know, good now, but we could put a trail up the Pequannock River. You could get from Bridgeport, you know, basically to Newtown and vice versa on a similar trail. Just think of what that would do for,
it
you know, people's
amazing.
Ability to get exercise or to get to the office on a bicycle, that sort of thing.
I love it, too. I love the two. And I think electric bikes, particularly in a very hilly, which is Fairfield County is hilly. It's not flat, are really right. another wonderful way to go. I love them. I've been on them. Do you go on an electric bike once in a while? They're fun.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll jump on one. They are kind of fun. As far as I can tell, they're basically, you know, low power motorcycles.
No, worry, they're not noisy.
No,
they're not noisy.
That's for sure.
No, they're not noisy. I agree with you. You got to be careful with them. But it's very hilly where I live. And so
yeah.
it's hard to do it. I don't have the quads that you do, Congressman Himes. What can I tell
Well,
you?
Moving east-west in Fairfield County is a challenge. You're absolutely right because, you know, you're going yeah. up and down through all those river valleys and stuff. But moving north-south is a little easier.
That's true. Well, Congressman Himes, have a safe trip back to coming home for the weekend to be with your girls.
Yep, back for the weekend, and then, you know, with any luck, we'll wind up our business in Washington next week. But something tells me we're going to get a little closer to Christmas, and we got a lot we can talk about, so we should reschedule another conversation around debt ceiling and Build Back Better and all that stuff. That's all going to be on the plate for the next couple weeks.
Definitely, we will do so. Thank you so much, Congressman Jim Himes. Have a safe trip back home. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Lisa.
We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.